Previously on Popping Collars.
I tried to watch one episode and it was so scary that I almost threw up and I had to turn it off.
So is this going to be our angle that Liz hasn't watched the show?
Yes. We're gonna just describe the show to Liz and see if we can make her throw up at some point during the
I watched on Halloween, I was at a friend's house and we watched just the first episode of American Horror Story Hotel.
Oh god, no.
And I was like, where is your bath? Like, I need to know where the bathroom is. It could happen at any moment. It was so disgusting.
Sorry. Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection between religion and pop culture. I'm your host. My name is Greg Knight. I am in Palm Beach, Florida, and with me are my co-hosts, Betsy Gonzalez from Alexandria, Virginia. Hello, Betsy.
Hey, Greg.
Liz Easton from Omaha, Nebraska. Hello, Liz.
Hey, Greg.
And our special guest for this episode, the academic dean of Bexley Seabury Seminary and the author of the Crusty Old Dean blog, Tom Ferguson. Hello, Tom.
Hey there. Great to be with you all.
Yay.
This is episode 27 of the 1,232nd ranked podcast in the iTunes spirituality category, and our topic today is the National Football League. And with that statement, we probably just lost about two-thirds of our regular listening audience. But bear with us for a second, if you can. Press on. The NFL is the most popular form of athletic competition in America today. All you need to prove this point are two words, Super and Bowl. Tom, so you recently posted an article on your blog taking an ethical stand against the NFL. I just wanted to start the show by giving you a chance to explain what led you to that decision.
Two main things led me to that decision. One is that I just found myself not agreeing with some of the organizational values of the institution, of the organization. Just like I choose not to shop at Walmart because I don't approve of their labor practices, and just like I boycotted grapes for a while back in the 80s, if there are things I find morally reprehensible about a way an organization is run, I can choose not to patronize that organization. And I think if any other organization had the same kind of labor practices as the NFL did, we might hear a different, a similar human cry to other organizations. That's one piece. I think it's labor practices are reprehensible. I come from a strong labor family, union people on all sorts of sides, and that's a core value of mine. Is how do you have an ethical workplace and things like due process and things like clear issues around arbitration and collective bargaining. So that's one thing. I can't stand their labor practices. They're unethical. And the second, and by far the much bigger one, is it's a product that's killing the people who take part in it. We're witnessing people destroying themselves. I mean,
this is actually an area where my guilty pleasure, which is professional wrestling, actually kind of comes into play a little bit, because one of the big sort of There are a couple of places where concussion stuff became huge news for professional wrestling. One was with the Chris Benoit murder case, where he had what's the brain disease that you kind of get, CTE?
CTE.
Yeah, right. Where that had built up, and he had basically had gone off the cliff of depression and had found himself in a sort of suicidal state, ended up killing his family before killing himself. But sort of similar stories from what you would hear from, like, Junior Seau, you know, stories or something like that. Just, you know, friends and family just sort of saying, hey, he wasn't quite himself there towards the end, you know. But then the other part is that a lot of this concussion research has been started by an ex-wrestler, Chris Nowitzki, who wrestled for the WWE. And so, like, right around 2005 or stuff, he was getting a bunch of concussions, you know, doing the professional wrestling stuff, and realized that there's no procedures in place to really take care of any athlete at any level. And that's when all of this sort of work started to ramp itself up a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing to think that, you know, people just kind of took it for granted for so long that, yeah, we can just kind of use these bodies and then just, it doesn't really matter what happens to them after they're off of our payroll. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's part of the big system mentality of, well, you know, they got to play football, so good for them. So why should I care, right?
Right. And well, I think there's, and apart from the other physical issues around joint pain, issues around all sorts of degenerative physical conditions people have.
Yeah, I remember Real Sports, Brian Gumbel, Real Sports on HBO, where they really, you know, a few years ago, where it was just about not even the head trauma, just the physical trauma to the body and how, you know, just the inability to walk, that eventually this early onset debilitation for so many linemen just carrying that weight and the difference in the weight of guys from the 70s to the guys now. And it's amazing. It's amazing when your body is the instrument of force, what that just does to you in totality.
Yeah. And that was glorified for so long. So like ESPN as part of their, NFL wrap up show at the end of a Sunday night, they used to feature a segment called Jacked Up or something like that, where it was the hardest hits from the day. So they would go through and edit in, and then they would have like sound effects and sort of sportscasters like sort of oohing and aahing over the hits. And you to think that would have been a segment on a show now is just incredible. Like, and so that was maybe like 5 years ago that segment was being featured.
I think it also shows what a certain amount of awareness can do, because I think it would. I don't think they could get away with something like that now. Even 5 to 7 years later, I think I'm not sure they could pull off something like that, a similar segment to that.
I think the chink in the NFL armor, it seemed like, I don't know, I may be getting my timeline wrong, but it seemed like the domestic violence was the issue that kind of got people sort of suspicious of what was happening behind the NFL shield a little bit. And then from that sort of came conversations about just sort of the overall violence of the game and who are these people that are doing this to themselves, to their bodies, and why? Like, what's going on?
I think it speaks to something. I think it speaks to some of the utilitarian aspect of the thing that let's take a look at Greg Hardy, who currently playing for the Dallas Cowboys. If he wasn't good at chasing down quarterbacks, he'd be in jail. Let alone being signed by the Dallas Cowboys, let alone being defended by the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. So this is the utilitarian aspect of, especially in the way in which there have been some minor changes in the college football system, but the college football system was even in some senses more brutal than the NFL system, in which scholarships weren't guaranteed. You could come to a school with a certain kind of commitment, but your scholarship could be stripped. They've moved towards kind of 4-year guaranteed scholarships now. That the utilitarian aspect of it all, that if the only reason these things are going to condone is if people perform, and once they don't perform, then they're not condoned.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Greg and I have to admit that for many years, seminary,
we were
co-managers of our fantasy football team together. And so, this is actually the first year we haven't done it. And it was, you know, life got in the way, and I said, you know, I don't want to invest my time over here in the same way I have. But, you know, that macabre humor of, oh, you know, we should draft a prison ministry team, you know, everybody who has a record, and that you could field a pretty nice team based on people who have really had a great deal of trouble in their lives and people that bail them out and those sorts of things.
And the role that gambling plays, because, I mean, that was a huge one for me, especially sort of fantasy football. I just feel like, you know, every advertisement that you see when you watch an NFL game now is a gambling advertisement.
I think the gambling thing is also important to think in the same way that sort of the government has a monopoly on force, the way in which gambling is so carefully controlled. And it's sort of, you know, football has sort of been selected to be this entity into which a lot of, I mean, you know, I was in the, yeah. I go to the UK a lot. You can bet on anything, anytime, and you walk down the street, there's the equivalent of like the 7-Eleven of gambling. You could just stroll in there, place your bets on a little, you know, on a kiosk and get your slip and then just go to the table. I mean, then when
the royal baby's name.
Right.
Bet
on bet on the queen's corgis.
I was wondering if we had a leveling of the gambling effect, how would that impact football? The fact that it's so controlled, and football in essence has a stranglehold on them. So did gambling create football, or has football created gambling to support football? You know, where does one begin and where does the other end?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I'm curious, Liz. So I know that you're not an NFL fan, but I know that you've probably heard these stories of sort of domestic violence, head issues. Yeah. Is there any ethical issue of the NFL that strikes you as particularly troubling from the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, and I'll admit just right up front that I don't know a whole lot about the NFL sort of as a corporation, other than that I'm from Seattle. So for the last couple of years, there's been a bunch of joy and, you know, fun around how the Seahawks are doing. I think for me, certainly the domestic violence issues that came out last year were really troubling, not only because of what they were, and that a lot of it was visible to us because of social media and all of that, but the cover-up element, which just reminds me of so many other instances of, like, institutional sin. So that was super troubling, and the idea that there's a kind of toxic masculinity that supports all of that and is celebrated by all of that is really troubling. But the head injury stuff is awful, too. I think that that's just a really big part of it. And I live in Nebraska, where football is a really big deal to us. And it's not a joke. Like, we have a geographically really dispersed state, a state that has all kinds of difference and diversity around the way we make our living, socioeconomic class, all of that. And college football is, like, the one thing that really brings us together. So, like, it really matters. It's not just a joke. It's a big deal. And when I think of these guys who, in many cases, are really just kids putting themselves physically and emotionally and mentally in, like, tremendous harm's way so that an organization can make tons of money on their backs, it is, as Tom said, a labor issue.
So I saw you tweeting about the Patriots on Sunday, Tom. So have you given up on the NFL or not?
Here's the deal. I don't want to be some sort of Debbie Downer, right?
Right.
I mean, I've kind of stated my thing. They certainly aren't going to get any of my money. I'm not going to buy any merchandise. I'm not going to patronize the system. I'm not going to go out of my way. But on the other hand, my son still loves the Patriots. I'm not going to not enjoy that with him. Instead, I engage him and we talk about it, you know. So yeah, I mean, it was on. It was a big game. He wanted to watch it. I'm like, all right, we'll watch it. He said, yeah, Dad, we're watching a lot more soccer these days. I'm like, well, yeah, here's why I'm watching more soccer. I don't patronize, right? I'm still trying to find the right words either. I've certainly significantly downshifted my engagement. You know, I knew this dude in college who lived in the same, like, floor of the dorm, and he's like, don't pay your phone bill, man. Because, like, there's a federal communications tax on your phone bill that, like, goes to the military. Like, well, my taxes pay for all sorts of things I don't like, and I need a phone. And that's kind of my first involvement to, like, the bizarre ethical engagement of how you choose to engage or not engage things.
Right. And that's where I see a lot of this conversation going tonight. So, like, the NFL is just kind of our entryway into why you keep buying your books from Amazon, right? Like, why do you keep supporting these systems that you know are problematic, kind of at their soul, but they're just so damn convenient or so damn entertaining that you just can't give them up. It's like an addiction almost.
Mm-hmm. Or it's like how it's woven into the fabric of your life and what in your expectation, you know, watching the football game with your son. I mean, that's, and the same way that you watch it with your dad, and, you know, and there's all this other stuff going on. And I think that, you know, the NFL is, yeah, just one example of that, of how we get woven in.
You know, I teach church history. And one of the things that I'm teaching 19th century stuff, one of the things I tell people is when you're dealing with the issue of sort of slavery in American Christianity, basically slavery in American society, the way in which we, for whatever reason, guilt, fear, ignorance, just willingness to desire to avoid uncomfortable things, have kind of portrayed this into, like, good North, bad South. No, it's just entirely not true. Getting to what we're talking about, the slave economy infiltrated every aspect of American society. If you were a textile worker in Lowell, you were using cotton made by substandard labor, the banking industry, the shipping industry, the insurance industry. It permeated society. So it wasn't a question of whether you engaged or not. You couldn't avoid it. You couldn't avoid it. The question then was, how did you choose to carve out a certain kind of stance towards that? You know, there were like seven different kinds of abolitionists. There were gradual abolitionists. There were sudden abolitionists. There were abolitionists who wanted to recolonize slaves, or abolitionists who did that. It wasn't a binary thing. It wasn't a simple thing. It was how, for lots of reasons, how you were raised, where you lived, what your religion was, what your job was. How can you carve out a way to deal with something that you simply can't avoid, but somehow that is informed by your values and you can live with yourself? We do it all the time. We do it all the time. And I think it's also important to think about, first of all, a different levels of addressing an issue. And then different situational ethics, the whole concept of situational ethics, that there are some ethical things that are hard and fast, don't kill. But even then, so situational ethics, meaning that ethics, it can be hard to have strong, hard boundaries around ethics. In essence, everything is situational, because we can say don't kill, but what about a soldier? What about self-defense? The concept from situational ethics that everything is bound by a situation and a context. And that some things are more good and less good than others, but it can we really say that some things are 100% empirically, ethically, either day or night, right or wrong, without taking into account the context? So the situational ethics, and then there's kind of levels of engagement. There's one thing between my family used to have season tickets to the New England Patriots. Thankfully, I don't have that particular ethic level of involvement in the system to deal with, because my dad canceled the tickets in 1994 because they stunk so bad for so long. So he canceled the tickets right when
it's the old Pete Carroll years.
Oh no, these were
pre Pete Carroll,
Rod Rush years. Oh, this was way pre Pete Carroll years. For one thing, okay, you're a season ticket holder. That's like kind of being a stockholder. So, okay, that's one. I would think that if we had season tickets, I would give them up. It's easy for me to say since we don't have them, but I've had to make ethical, moral decisions about other things in the past. And so then that's like kind of being a stockholder. Then the next level is, okay, I understand this. There's no way that I can possibly – the NFL is not quaking in its boots about what I think. It's not like there's any way I can bring down this system. Mm-hmm. Okay. But then there's a whole question of awareness. I think one thing to keep in mind is, sure, things like Amazon, things like the NFL, and things like Google are these incomprehensible behemoths that dominate our lives. And yes, what can one person, what can one group? On the other hand, horse racing and boxing used to be extraordinarily popular, and people stopped following them because there was enough moral, ethical. Bear baiting used to be incredibly popular. There's no reason. Yes, the NFL has this kind of cultural dominance, but there's absolutely no reason that it's preordained to do that. And the way there were these other kind of broader shifts in culture is that they're eventually gradually built to be enough of a consensus. There were broader changes in the society. The society kind of caught up to where some of those things were. So we can't. I think there's a very good possibility that in 25 years the NFL will go the way of horse racing or boxing.
Mm-hmm. But that's interesting because that kind of dovetails with the dystopian conversations that we were having before, like with The Walking Dead, with all of the kind of post-apocalyptic scenarios. And Liz had pointed out a few times about this idea of the fall of empire and like how. As a story, that's really appealing. That's a really appealing place to start because you're basically starting from scratch. But I guess if you're looking at life through the lens of empire, right? So if you're looking at life through the lens of an American who watches football every Sunday and may or may not skip out on church to do it and probably has a light beer in hand while watching, or something like that. Like it seems really crazy to hear somebody say that football may be similar to boxing is now or something like that. That seems from sitting from the seat of the American recliner right now to be foolish. But isn't that how empires work? You know, presenting an alternative sounds foolish to the empire.
And all empires fall. All empires fall. It's the one thing you can be sure of with empires. They all fall.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting is because I went back and I reread the blog post from August today. And as I'm reading it today in class, I taught Amos because we're in the midst of the prophets. And as we're moving through it, I'm like going, oh, I'm getting a lot of like hard Amos tones. And then you boom, drop Amos right at the end. I was like, oh, I forgot this was in here. But it was this element of, you know, his complaint was that the wealthy in the north and the northern kingdom were sinning, and they were prospering from that sin, building on the backs of others and you know, foreign alliances and all that stuff. But they were making their money, and as long as they offered huge big ass sacrifices to God, you know, not to Baal but to God, then they were fine. They could check out. You know, they gave the best fatted calves. They gave everything. They're doing everything right. Then they get to check out and not take responsibility. And it brought me right into these moments of when it's like Breast Cancer Awareness Month and it's the NFL. And look at how we're helping. And look at, you know, the NFL wives are going and visiting this homeless shelter. And, you know, oh, and we're participating at this kid's hospital. And those things are all good. But it's this element of, you know, as long as it's done and we do it grandly and we make sure there's photographers there and it's documented, then can it excuse everything else? You know, and then you have D'Angelo Williams wanting to wear pink all year long to honor, I believe, his mother, who a breast cancer survivor. And they said, oh, no, you can't wear pink on your uniform outside of October. Sorry. You know, this is just that time when we care about this, and because this is when it gets the pink press. Right. It's and
charity as marketing.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the point. It's marketing. They're making tons of money off of all of that, the pink uniform stuff, just like almost every corporation is who markets things in pink for breast cancer. But that's probably a whole other podcast.
I think we can't lose sight of the fact that the NFL's dominance came with the rise of television. It's a great sport to watch on TV because mm-hmm. things like instant replay, when you're watching a game live, it's sometimes what just happened. It's hard to tell just what happened. So I think it's absolutely no coincidence that it exploded in popularity when television exploded as a medium as well. From kind of 1960 to the present, you can chart its explosion. It spent a generation doing everything it can to increase its brand, increase its awareness, and increase its place in the culture. But that has invited a lot of attention and scrutiny, too.
And the hyper-masculinity. That's something that Liz pointed out. I think that's huge, right, Liz? Because all of a sudden now it's like, especially when it comes to the head injury stuff, you know, or something like that, it's like, well, what, you're not tough enough to get back out there and play the game? Or what, you're not, you know, you're not man enough? Right. So it, like all of a sudden everything's a challenge. Right. And even that kind of permeates to the fans a little bit. So it's like, oh, you know, tough guys watch football, you know, like there's this kind of.
And
yeah. Like you said,
cool
like
girls.
A hyper masculinity.
Cool chicks.
And cool girls. Watch yeah.
football. But yeah, I mean, I think that the violence and the violence to these players and then also the violence that they perpetrate is part of the hyper-masculinity, but the celebration of that masculinity begins so much earlier, like on high school campuses. I mean, we've seen that where these kids feel like they're sort of above the law in a way because their high schools are celebrating them in such a way. And it's really tough for me to be – I am critical of this, but I'm also aware that I'm being a little classist – in a sense, that I can sort of step outside of it and be like, oh, these foolish rubes who like their football. When in reality, in small towns in America, everyone is there on a Friday night. It's a big deal. And it has something to do with how we raise our boys and what we celebrate as a town and as a community that then filters all the way up to the NFL or all the way down to high school. Who knows? I don't know what direction that's moving in.
Tom, how is your hiatus from football, Ben? What have you realized?
A couple of things. One is I've had conversations with people. Every time someone's engaged me on this, one of the things I've tried to say is this is really no different than how we live our lives every day. You know, dozens of times in a single day, we have to make choices about what we do, what we engage, what we don't engage, which supermarket I go to, you know, which car I buy. We're constantly making choices about how will we try and shape our lives in an ethical kind of way that we can live with ourselves at the end of the day. What I'm doing is nothing that we don't do. I probably haven't done a dozen times today already before getting here, talking to you on my Macintosh computer, you know, wearing my Eddie Bauer shirt. I mean, all the things that we do in any given day. So that's one thing is that it's, if you ask how's it felt, I'm like, okay, I'm actually being intentional about this in the ways that I'm maybe not so intentional in other ways. But it's really part of a broader set of ethical, moral decisions we have to make. And one thing, the second thing is, and we've touched upon this, just how damn omnipresent the NFL is. It's everywhere. You can't get away from it at all. That's something that, oh yeah, there's always something on. They're always talking about it on ESPN. They're all, mm-hmm. It's on all the time, everywhere. It just permeates the system. So yeah, that's one thing as I've been more intentional about my sports consumption in the past few months. It's everywhere. I was just saying, at the end of the day, yeah, it is an ethical issue. How are you able to look at yourself in the mirror at the end of the day? Everyone's going to come to that a million different times in a million different ways around a million different things. And what are your core values, and how do you try and carve that out in life?
Well, that's the message from the pulpit often. It's kind of your life and your love and your action. Where are you vessels? What does that look like? You know, and what does that then say about who you are and what you stand for? You know, as a Christian or as a dad or as a member of a community or what have you, that it all is connected. On the Wayne It's Up game, I feel like going home now, now, now. Fails and turns to luck, words I'm making it, it seems. Whip hand and joint fire, fire. Cut the ground, better take just a powder from under one. Now the laugh is up, struck up, I'll grapple up and down, down, down.
Pieces. We should do our Go in Pieces segment. This is our chance to talk about things that we're into right now. Betsy, what's something that you are into right now?
I'm about a year behind, but I just finished the Ken Burns Roosevelt documentary. Oh my gosh, I can't stop now comparing everything in my life or that's going on to trials and tribulations in the Roosevelt family. Or suddenly having a monologue going in my head, like I'm reading a letter from my life. I'm essentially living inside the story of the Roosevelts, but then also a Ken Burns documentary motif all at the same time. So,
Liz, what are you into in the popular culture?
So in my little life, the Diocese of Nebraska has a new vehicle, and we spend a lot of our time traveling. And when you buy a new vehicle, it sometimes comes with satellite radio, like a year's free subscription of satellite radio. So that's sort of been my popular culture indulgence in the last week. It's super fun. I don't think I would ever pay for it on my own, but it's really, really fun.
Tom, before you go, do you have a website or anything, a Twitter feed or anything that you want to plug?
Sure. I blog at crustyolddean.blogspot.com, firmly entrenched in the internet blogging technology of 2008. crustyolddean.blogspot.com, at crustyolddean, only one D, crustyolddean on Twitter.
Is there anything right now that's in the popular culture that you're really into?
A lot of football. Soccer. A lot of football.
There you go. Yeah.
Who are you watching a lot of on the pitch?
English Premier League. Arsenal is my team.
Nice.
Shameless plug.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The Episcopal story, Birth and Rebirth. Just came out.
Cokesbury.
Anyway,
I get it.
What are you into in the popular culture, Greg?
I have recently had a birthday, and so I came into some Amazon money. Ooh. I got a series called Lock and Key that's written by Joe Hill and drawn by Gabriel Rodriguez, and it is fabulous. Like, I'm thinking about shipping it to you guys so that we can do a show on Lock and Key.
Sure.
And just a reminder, you can find Popping Collars at poppingcollarspodcast.com, where you can get all of our episodes. You can also feel free to subscribe to our show on iTunes. That's how we will move up in the rankings, so please do that if you can. And also, you can find us on EpiscopalCafe.com, who features our show each and every time. We love EpiscopalCafe.com, and we hope that you will check out their site. So with that, that is Popping Collars for this time. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Liz, for coming on the show. Keep those collars popped, and we'll see you next time.